home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hi guys, it's Harriet Rose here. I hope you're all keeping safe at home, staying indoors, self-isolating, meditating, looking after yourselves and having a lovely day inside your house.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
So we're joined in the studio now by my friend and yours, Mr. Josh Whittaker.
Hello.
Someone came out of my house the other day unannounced, and I live on my own at the moment, so I don't have anyone to impress.
I don't think anyone should be coming around unannounced.
No.
At all.
I'm going straight for the bathroom. Absolutely not.
Were they just calling in to use the bathroom?
No, they weren't. They were coming in to get drunk.
I was on holiday the last week with my parents in Cumbria.
Lovely.
And they've got a thing there where all our relatives live there. No one locks their door and they just walk in. It makes me feel sick.
Does
the
it?
Idea of just going,
yeah.
Imagine if that was your
neighbours,
house.
Neighbours.
Like in Coronation Street.
Yeah, it's very much like that.
Is it really like that in Coronation Street?
I don't know, it's a kind of myth,
it's
isn't
like,
it?
Because it's a bit like, I would imagine if it's on telly, it's a little bit like not saying goodbye at the end of a phone call. Just like, it just quickens everything up. But that would be like, you'd just end up with a soap opera with loads of scenes of people waiting on the doorstep going, oh, he's not in. I'll give it another knock.
The thing with a knock is you could set up the character with their knock. Do you
know
what
it could be a...
Twat. So, yeah, you could do anything you wanted. I don't know if the knock actually picked up on the camera.
It is something on locking a door. I remembered this week that... So I grew up in Devon on Dartmoor.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. We didn't just not lock our house when we were in. We didn't lock it when we were out. To the point where I don't think we had a key. We lived that much in the middle of nowhere, and it felt totally normal to me until last week someone mentioned something along those lines, and I was like, oh yeah, that's like when I... And I was like, oh, that's mad.
Yeah, I think maybe a lot of these houses up north are like that. Maybe we
Can
should
Can I
get-
just say my parents have moved and they do now lock the house?
Sure. For the best,
But maybe we should just plan like an outing.
Yeah, see if we can break
in. Drive up north and see how much we can get.
I'd imagine in Dartmoor, though, they're probably quite welcoming, wouldn't they? You'd probably, if you got sort of parents that would go, no, come in.
Yeah,
have a biscuit.
Well, you just never see anyone, so you might as well invite anyone in.
My family are all from up north, and they always lock the doors, I'm sure.
Where up north, though? Probably some rough area.
Well, I say
rough.
Up north, where's Staffordshire? That's not like north-north, is it?
North Midlands.
And then my dad's Yorkshire.
Yeah, that's the north.
They did ring the door. I've just had a memory.
That's all right, it's going to happen.
I was at my grandparents' house one Christmas, and they rang on the door, and it was charity collectors, and they live in a cul-de-sac. And there was this giant float that was going up this cul-de-sac with Santa Claus on it. And you just think, it's a dead end. But how are you going to fucking turn that at the end? You've got to turn it round and come all the way down. This giant float with Santa Claus on it. And the elves rang on the doorbell with collection buckets. And we all, as a family, all seven or eight of us, all stuck our heads out the door. And we looked out and Santa Claus turned around and looked at us and went, having a do? I loved it. Having a do. Here we are, thank you, Santa.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Will I Am is joining us on FUBAR Radio right now. Oh my god. How are you, babe?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm really relaxed now that we're sort of sitting like mates.
We're mates.
Oh my god. You just said it. That's a fact now.
It's a fact.
I actually came to see you when I was 11, and it was one of the first gigs I've ever been to. No, maybe I was like 13.
How old are you now?
Really young, like 15, 16 now. But it was the first gig I'd ever been to without my mum, and I lost my mind. It was one of the best gigs I've ever seen in my life.
Where was it?
Birmingham Carling Academy.
Was that 2007?
Yeah. Was it 2000? Because I was Googling it, trying to work it out. So in 2007, I wasn't as young as I thought it was. Maybe I was 15, 16.
Because it couldn't have been 2008.
Well, it was honestly the best gig of my life. So you tweeted about coders. You said, great coders are today's rock stars. Great coders are today's wizards. Magic is science. Harry Potter is a coder. Now, I've had an idea, okay? I've always wanted to go to Hogwarts. Obviously, it doesn't sadly exist in real life. But your I Am Angel Foundation is incredible, works with people in education. Why can't you create a Hogwarts for coders where Will I Am is Dumbledore and you can just hire the best people on earth to be the teaching staff in your Hogwarts. Maybe you can call it Will Hogwarts. Probably a better name can be found, but I'm just pushing this to you.
I swear to God, that's been my dream. Like a summer youth program for kids to go and learn to code and build robots. And it feels magical, like Harry Potter. That's like my dream, though.
You need to create Hogwarts. It's got to happen.
Like orphans, kids that don't have families. That's my dream. I want to have like either a summer program or a compound where kids that don't have families, like Apple the App was adopted. Like Apple's my hero from the Black Eyed Peas, my best friend. His story is like the most magnificent story in the world, being sponsored, living in the Philippines. His mom gives him up for adoption to come to America to have a better life, to take care of the family once he has success. And he's done that. So now we're like, okay, there's a lot of other kids that could use not only a lift up, but a whole new trajectory on what their capabilities are. Harry Potter doesn't have to be fantasy. That could be for real. What I mean by for real is like technology is magic. If I didn't tell you what a phone was and then I FaceTime someone, you'll be like, what the F is that? If you didn't know what virtual reality was and you went to sleep, what the freaking VR headset on, and I said, don't take the helmet off, and you're walking around in virtual reality in three-dimensional space, you would think that it was real. So it is magical. And if you could like start teaching kids at an early age to build robots, to write code in a magical way, that is real life Hogwarts.
And you'd be creating a whole bunch of billionaires because it's one of the most lucrative, incredible jobs in the world now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
If there was anyone on earth that could create Hogwarts, it's Will.i.am.
Bill Gates.
Nah, Will.i.am, man. I'm all over it. I think it's you, man. It's you. You've got to create this Hogwarts for coding.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We've got a rap legend on. I'm not going to say UK rap. I'm just going to say rap legend as far as I'm concerned. It is, of course, Low Key.
Oh, thank you so much,
man. Not at all, man.
Introduction.
It's just really, really personally good to kind of have you here, back. Everything, because the last time I saw you in person, I don't know if you remember,
we were in the tube station.
It was fucking Highbury and Islington.
Yeah.
So it's symbolic that we would meet again in North London. You know what I mean? Exactly. Because the time I saw you before that, right? This is the most random story about sort of people collaborating on a track, because we collaborated on the remix for Alphabet Assassins.
That is correct.
A Mongrel remix, which was a part of the album that you put out with the supergroup Mongrel.
Yes.
And I remember I was coming back along the motorway from a wedding. One of my best friend's big sisters got married, and I'm in like full tuxedo spinning down the motorway in my mate's car, and I get a phone call from Low Key going, what are you doing tomorrow? Come and do this tune. So for the rest of that journey in my tuxedo, I'm just strapping bars on my phone. I'm like, Low Key wants me in studio tomorrow, no time for talking. I think you sent me the instrumental. I don't even think there was time to send me the instrumental.
Wow.
I just imagined an instrumental. Just like rapping, like writing bars to like Human League's Don't You Want Me. Do you know what I mean? Because that's probably what was, you know, when you're in the mood on the way from a wedding, you start listening to wedding playlist type shit. So I'm probably just writing bars to like Human League's Don't You Want Me. But yeah, then the next day I came into the studio with you guys.
Yeah.
And then after Mongrel, there was like, you know, a huge lengthy hiatus, just after there. And now you come back at such a perfect time.
Our generations, I feel like in some way, have struggled with adapting to the way things have changed.
Yeah.
And I think flexibility is really the most important thing if you're trying to build a legacy that has, you know, real longevity.
Yeah.
And so I think that seeing how things work, even since starting making music again in 2016, has been an ongoing process for me. But yeah, working out how things have changed, you know, things have changed, and there are now specific parts and kind of cogs in the machinery of this actual industry.
Mm.
When we were rapping at the open mic in 2003 and 2004, we would talk about an industry, but there was no industry.
Yeah.
There was no industry. There were some people that had been absorbed and kind of integrated, shall we say, into an existing music industry, which was largely NME, indie music dominated.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when Jay-Z got the headline act at Glastonbury, I remember looking at that situation and thinking, wow, for what are essentially white guitar bands to tour the country is so much easier than for people that don't necessarily fit into a specific demographic that makes powerful people comfortable.
Yeah.
Now we're in a situation where if you listen to Capital Extra, which, you know, essentially is, sorry to say the name of another station.
Oh, no, not at all.
Liberty.
Which is like, you know, kind of integration between Choice FM, Capital FM, whatever. Listen to what it's playing 24/7. Things have changed massively.
Absolutely.
It's almost akin to the difference between what George Best was making in his prime and Pele was making in his prime and what Raheem Sterling's making today.
Yeah.
If we're looking about, if we're looking at what rappers of yesteryear were able to do for a living and what these other artists now are able to do.
Yeah.
So, okay, what do you do in that situation? Do you get bitter? Do you decide to go against that grain and against that machine? Or do you think, okay, look, this is what I can do. This is what I can work with. Mm. Have this existing foundation to build off before. And just do it like that. And so I've been fortunate. I've been lucky.
Yeah, been absolutely. Lucky, well, like super blessed with talent. I think that's like your best weapon. You know, no one can deny, because even though you before, for want of a better word, you know, the one of the buzzwords right now is woke, is being woke. Before that, we were just called conscious. You know, it's a synonym, really and truly, but it wasn't a buzzword back then.
Tuesday Takeover with Cece Coleman on FUBAR Radio.
Hey guys, welcome to the Tuesday Takeover. My name is Cece Coleman. I am here with the lovely Gavin. He's my mate. Say hello, Gavin.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Cece. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be great.
Well, for those of you that don't really know who I am or what I do, I work on an incredible show that I adore called First Dates. It's on Channel 4. The premises for the show is people come in and they go on dates and they're immediately being judged by the way that they look. So I'm going to tell you who we've got on today. So we have two incredible comedians. I'm going to let them pronounce their last names because I messed it up earlier. We have Natasha.
Leggero.
Leggero. With another thingy. No,
it's like, you know, je.
Je.
Yeah.
Leggero.
Leggero. You know, it's supposed to be intimidating.
Okay. And we have her husband, Moshe.
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 So now you fucked up the first name too.
Oh, God.
Would you like me? Would you like me to try
the
full name?
Tell us your full name.
It's Moshe Berlusconi. No, it's Kasher. Moshe Kasher. Moshe Kasher.
So, guys, Gavin over here is quite single. Can we talk about him and his life and how we get him a partner?
How to find Gavin love?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's the problem, Gav?
No, the problem.
Do you mind if I call you Gav?
Yeah, of course, man. Yeah,
is that too casual?
No, of course, it's all good. I think it's probably me more than anything. It's just I think my standards are just all over the shop. I don't really know what I'm looking for. It's that mess of a situation when you get to a certain point in life where you're like, I want to settle down, but I don't really want to settle down. And now I'm like in this place where I'm sort of trying to have fun still, but then realizing at the end of the day, actually, I probably should be thinking about someone serious. Oh, I don't know.
Are you internet dating?
I've tried it. Yeah, I've tried it. It's a world of interesting people.
Because just right off the bat, having just met you, you're very charming.
Oh, oh, thank you.
You're very handsome.
I thought you were going in a different direction.
Well, I'm about
just,
to.
Having just met you, I know all the problems.
Gavin's got loads of dating stories, but I'm not going to embarrass him. I know Gavin quite well, and he's got some seriously good.
Now, what do you got,
Gavin? Material. Actually, you could use it in the show.
We'll just say, you know, Gavin from FUBAR Radio. Here was a story that happened.
Tell them about Get Out. It's literally got a title now. This story, Get Out.
Yeah, so I kind of got kidnapped on a date once.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So we met up for drinks. She got there before me. I was on time, but she said I was late. And she'd had like about a bottle and a half of wine already.
She was drunk. She was drunk when you
hammered.
Arrived.
Hammered.
She
hammered.
Oh my God.
You might say FUBAR when you arrived.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. But I sort of went with it, and she was handling the drink pretty well. It all kind of went really well from that end. Then we went to a place nearer to where we lived, another bar around there. Then
let me just say, I would never go to a second location with someone who showed up to the showed up to the date totally drunk.
Okay. I have to add in, she was 6'2", so she's a bit taller than me. Like
a bit taller.
A little bit. Tiny bit taller than you.
6'2"?
But
six
still hot
two.
And young, please.
Was she dribbling a basketball on the way to location two?
Could've been. Yeah. Get to the second bar. That goes okay.
Did she pick you up and carry you over the mantle?
Not quite. Then we ended up just like hanging out back at her new place.
You went to her house?
Yeah, yeah, afterwards, yeah. Oy. Yeah, nothing happened. I spilt red wine on her brand spanking new sofa.
And this is already someone who was so mad that you were like 2 minutes late.
And just, somebody that's so much more physically imposing than you.
Exactly.
She could have beat your ass, Gavin.
Exactly.
She could have beat your ass, Gavin.
Exactly, exactly.
It's on my red wine. Not on my room. Come here, Gavin.
Oh my
She's
God.
On the other side of the living room. She just grabs Gavin and pulls him across.
Most people don't understand how realistic that actually was.
Oh my God, she got physical?
No,
oh wait,
not
I
quite.
Want to know what she said. So you, I mean, you're such a sweet guy. You must have felt awful that you spilled it.
I felt terrible. I felt I was ringing around cleaners, 24-hour cleaners and stuff, trying to do everything I could to make this situation better. And then at that point, I realised, just before the wine incident happened, I was going to make my excuses to go. And I thought, I can't really go just now. So I stayed around a bit longer, and I actually did stay the night, made sure everything was okay the next day, and called cleaners and stuff.
How big of a drop did you spill? Like, was it
was
a quite, lot?
It was half a glass.
Okay. Ooh,
and it was on a brand spanking new light grey sofa. No. I kept hearing her getting up to lock the doors and lock windows, and I just thought, what is going on here? This is really strange. Yeah, the next day, I was just like, oh my God, right, so everything's all right, and she'd calmed down by then.
Sure.
And so I just
she
I
wasn't pounding her fist into her hand, taking her lunch money.
Not quite. I had this really horrible feeling. I thought that I was locked in.
Oh, that is something.
Well, you were locked in.
Well, yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's not very gracious of her. I think if you're hosting and someone does spill anything on anything, you should always say, "No problem, no problem. I'll take care of it." But she, honestly, I mean, that's the only
she
answer.
She had a meltdown, didn't she? I don't think she was capable of doing.
No.
That.
No, it was an emotional part of the evening, let's say that.
So, guys, Taz, how do you two keep it together? You're married. How long have you been married? How do you keep it working when you're working?
Well, we are lucky in that we don't get on each other's nerves. I think that's a big part of our relationship.
And back to Gavin, when you're looking for a mate, I think that is one of the most important things is, like, someone who doesn't annoy you. Because, you know, you've got to be able to spend a lot of time with someone. And you have friends who are like that. And then you have friends who are like, I can see them once every 2 weeks, you know. To me, the most important thing in a mate.
Yeah, but in a mate.
No, in a couple.
In a mate, an actual mate, one who is mating.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We're joined this year now by actress
Anna Mann. Hello. You're trained, aren't you?
I'm a train. I'm trained. Oh, sort of.
Oh.
Sort of. I was thrown into it in a way. The training kind of happened more recently.
Oh.
After I'd done a good 40 years in theatre, okay. I thought, I need to learn a couple of tips because I'm rubbish at this. So I am trained recently. My best friend Sue Clinch, she put me onto this little school round the corner. She said it was a school. It turned out to just be a very old man. But he had some tips.
Oh, yeah.
Always face front. Always face front. They want to see this. All of it. And I did a lot of my plays, my back to the crowd, and that was a big... Looking back, I mean, that's why it didn't work.
Literally looking back.
Quite literally, very good.
Over the shoulder.
He's fast.
Thank you.
I do everything over the shoulder. Especially fucking. You're thinking about me looking at you over the shoulder now, aren't you?
I know,
and so is everyone in Britain.
I know.
What is this show about? What? When did I start Pilates?
When did you get started?
Well, I left Leicester with a vengeance, you know, because you have to. You've got to get out of there. Growing up, it was all Leicester. Do you know what I mean? I thought Leicester was the world. I really did. I thought Leicester was just carried, you know, like Terry Pratchett. Leicester was just a sort of globe on a turtle. And then I learned about science and other countries and other cities and just not Leicester. And I was like, fuck this, get out of Leicester. It was a little show I saw. It was Betty Davis. Oh, God. I'm thinking about her now and I'm crying. Betty Davis, and it was just a little second of her I saw. It was actually just her. It was actually when she was just an extra in something. She was walking in the back. It was so good. And I watched that again and again. I thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an actress, you know. Cut to 40 years later, almost got an audition last week. So,
wow.
That's great. That's nice.
This is fun, isn't it?
I think it's nice.
What's this show about?
How incredibly inspiring that you've never given up.
Never give up, Nick. Never give up. You've sort of given up now, have you?
Well, the reason I'm on FUBAR is because it's around the corner from where I live.
From the pub.
It's just around the corner. I just live around the corner.
Oh, really? Oh,
it's
lovely.
It's ease of access, really. But, yeah, I've given up.
You mustn't. Can you give back?
Well, I think
can you get back into it?
Well, what we want is guests like you to
give you inspiration.
To stoke the fire.
You mustn't give up because you've got something.
Thank
you've got a talent, a spark.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? This is music to my ears because we've had so many guests on and no one's really picked me up.
No.
At any point. They've always talked about themselves and, you know, what
selfish,
they like.
Isn't it? People come
they're
on.
Selfish. For the actresses and actors are very selfish.
We're going to ask you about your favourite things, Anna.
Oh, right.
And I thought it would be interesting first to ask who your favourite actors and actresses are.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I can't not mention drunk old Freddie Basden. that ring a little bell there, Nat. Wonderful actor. We did a sort of spin-off, talking about who? Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We did a sort of spin-off. It wasn't great, but it was called Professor What Now? And it was all right, you know, but drunk old Freddie Basden was in it with me, and he was wonderful, he really was, and he lived life. You know, like Oliver Reed, or you, Nick, or you, Nat, to a degree, with your comics and stuff. But, you know, he lived life. He drunk, he fucked anything and everything. Constantly. It was horrible.
During filming?
Often. But as soon as we'd finish, he'd bang out the door, straight out the... He wouldn't bang the door. I mean, we tried. He probably would. If there was a hole in it, he'd go for it.
Keyhole.
Fuck it. Literally. But he out the door, off his face every night, you know, groping the women, fighting the men. It was the 70s. It was fine. Groping women, groping the men, fighting the women. He didn't care, you know. If he could fight it or fuck it or snort it, he would.
So would you say...
And he was a real actor. Do you know what I mean? He there was fire. When you talk about fire, that's what Fred was.
You're more of a fan of his work off screen
off
and stage
well,
rather than on.
You say that, but see him as Captain Blue, the pirate. See him as the postman in Who's the Postman?
Okay.
See him as the Rogue Baker. Have you seen that, Rogue Baker? It's good. Imagine a baker. We all know bakers.
Yes.
They make our bread, yes? The bread we eat comes from the
pasties.
Baker.
Pasties.
If you must. Now imagine one going rogue.
Right, okay.
Like really going rogue. They wanted Rowdy Roddy Piper, but they had to go for drunk old Freddie Basden in the end. And he would lose it. Just complete commitment to character. He had to be, you know, what's the word where you're going to a hospital?
Committed.
You know? Committed. He had to be committed halfway through filming, and then they would get him out again. He'd film a bit, and then they would put him back in. You know, that was how. But they just wind him up. And let him loose. And that's acting for me. I've never achieved anything like it, really. If I'm
committed?
Honest, no. I've been committed all the fucking time. Probably be committed after this, darling. But I did a Santa's Grotto once. The right. Co-op in Nottingham in 84. I was one of the elves.
Right.
And I did have to be physically restrained at one point, you know, because I was in it. I mean, you know what it's like, Nick, when you're on fire. So, yes, a drunk called Freddie Basden, wonderful. And the thing about Fred, if I can just say this one final thing. You say, you know, did you love him for his drinking, his groping, his snorting? You know, I once saw him snort a man. Tried to. Lovely little chap called Freddie Flowers, who's sadly not with us anymore.
Was that what did him in?
It didn't help, right. Shall we say that? I mean, that's what started a very long decline. Imagine if you got a man tried to snort you.
I know.
You'd lose all sense of security in the world. But, I mean, you'd be wondering what's up and what's down, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know?
You wouldn't know where
here I am
going.
Living my life. We're all trying to get somewhere in life, and suddenly a man tries to snort you. And you're like, what is this world? Anyway.
Where would you even start?
Well, on his head. He went straight for the top. He tried to get it all up. He was just gone by
how
that
far
point.
Did he get?
He got a few hairs and a bit of flesh.
Oh, wow.
And he had a powerful, because of his training, because of his lung capacity.
Of course.
Because, he did his exercises every day. Even if he was pissed, he'd be there doing his exercises for his lungs, getting his ribs in and out. And so when he sucked, it was like a fucking vacuum, you know? But the thing about Fred was, no matter what he'd had to drink or snort or whatever, he'd always be there on set the next day. You see what I mean? And this is the difference. You don't get this with young actors. Full costume, never his own. But there he'd be. You know, as soon as the director said action, no matter what he'd had to drink or whatever, no matter how late he'd been out, no matter how fucked he got, as soon as the director says action every time, without fail, he'd shit himself. You know? And it was really thick, black 70s poo, you know, just all over the floor. And we'd slip up and I'd throw up because it stunk, you know. And we'd be rolling around in the shit and sick for ages. And it was the 70s, you know. That's what it was like. And then One day, the producer said, Fred, he took him to one side and he said, Fred, it's got to stop. You know? We love you, you're visceral, you're real. Your acting choices are incredibly brave, but you are shitting all over the stage.
So. Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
I'm like a kid in a candy shop today because I've got another one of my absolute favourites. Possibly the best dancer in all of music. Certainly the best performer to wear shorts on stage. Wow. It's John Grant. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Joey. Thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I love your
likewise.
Shirt.
Thank you. What I wanted to ask you about, obviously, and this has been covered in lots of your interviews, and I don't want to gloss over it because it's quite important, but I am going to gloss over it because
people
can find out about this. Yeah. But, like, you're so open and candid on like a lot of your struggles and things and like how you feel about stuff, and it's really great that you do that on your records
and in
interviews. But do you find that that has caused a slew of people perpetually going, hey John, are you okay? And does that get annoying? Or
that does happen sometimes, and sometimes it is annoying because you think, oh,
I'm in a good mood today.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood today. Why oh yeah, that's right, because you've
listened to that,
exposed yourself. Yes.
Yeah
But I mean, like you sort of intimated there, it's to be expected. You know, and you know, when you think about it, it's, I appreciate, you know, the fact that, you know, people care enough to say something like that. How you doing? It's not meant as an attack.
Yeah.
How you doing, you fucking freak? You know, it's not. I'm pretty sure it's not like that.
Yeah.
Oh, from my family, it is, of course.
Yeah. But that's from anyone's family, and that's
exactly.
When they don't know anything. Like,
exactly.
It's like, why are you wearing those pink trousers? Are you okay?
Yeah. And then you have to say to them for the 6,000th time, "They're salmon trousers, you fucking imbecile."
And they're part
salmon.
Of a full suit.
Yeah. Exactly.
I want to speak to you. And one of the things that I think you do so beautifully is that you mix some of that really heavy stuff in with the stuff that I am always fascinated with in every part of everyday life, is the like minutiae of life. Like, and this is just from a couple of like lyrics and stuff, like 67 yogurts and some of the really absurd put downs, but like all those tiny little trivial things that you also go, they're as much of part of what's wrong with this place as what I'm feeling inside. And I think that's so beautiful how you do that.
Thank you.
How do you decide which kind of tiny little things to kind of put onto a record? Like 67 types of yogurt and the cheese being made in a certain part of Iowa and all this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I think that's
how does that come to you?
Well, I think that you should, you know, the thing about writing lyrics is that you must always remember that every type of language is useful to you, and every type of object that exists and every phenomenon that exists is usable in what you do, because even if you can't see the connection at the moment that you are perceiving this thing with your eyes or your ears or whatever, or your skin, it may be useful to you later when it comes to writing your lyrics. So I think one of the things that I've learned to do is be much more open to all of the possibilities that are around me every day. And the truth is that, well, everyday life is quite absurd. It's quite amazing, and it's quite absurd. You know, you're noticing all sorts of weird things. Like, you know, I've used this example quite a few times. You're thinking about, you know, how you weren't really emotionally present when your mother died, you know, while you're buying milk or standing in line at the grocery store and looking at some, you know, gum wrapper, some sort of gum wrapper that you think is incredibly beautiful or incredibly horrible or at the same time. So
you're being confronted. See, I would never, even though, I mean, obviously you can't get them all because there's so many, but I was like,
yeah,
no one's ever really appreciated the artwork on a packet of chewing gum.
I think they have in the 70s. I certainly did.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, that is the reality of everyday life. It's quite absurd. And there's all these things happening that you have no control over. You don't have all this, especially these days where, you know, you've got your phone and you've got the computer and you've got, you know, radios and cameras everywhere and advertising. There's so much advertising being thrown at you on a daily basis. I mean, it's been that way for decades.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it's, you know, reached a, you know.
I kind of like this new wave of it because I'm, you know, I'm being advertised things that I say out loud, which means they're listening.
Right.
But I'm lazy, so I want the things that I want to be put in front of me rather than me having to go and search for them. I think it's quite convenient in a weird way.
Absolutely. In some ways, I mean, I do like it when I hear about cities that don't allow, for example, Sao Paulo in Brazil.
Oh, right.
Is meant to have, there's no more billboards allowed. Outside advertising on buildings or anything like
that. That's right.
I think that would be fascinating to be able to actually see the architecture in a city.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at some horrible, you know.
Like deodorant advert.
Yeah. I do think that would be amazing, but I do agree with you. I mean, sometimes, I mean, it's scary the way they tailor things to your specific taste because that means all sorts of other things. It's really fascinating. I always get synthesizer software and hardware ads, which I love. I do love to look at them.
I get hair regrowth plans advertised to me a lot at the moment.
Really?
That's just some paranoid.
Is that a weave?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. This is a full wig. This
is
an Elton John.
Must be extremely expensive.
But back to those kind of like tiny little minute details that you like to put in your stuff. Are you walking around and noticing them and just go, right, I'll write that down and keep it for later, and you've just got a big sort of vat of them?
Yeah.
That's great.
Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne on FUBAR Radio.
We have a very special guest on the line right now. Good mate of mine. And if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be as known as I am and even have this radio show, I dare say. Mm. People, we have the illustrious, the massively successful Ed Sheeran on the line. Yo, brother.
You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. You sound in a very high spirit.
No, I literally just woke up on my sofa. I had a driving lesson this morning.
Man.
I fell asleep as soon as I got in.
Fair play.
I hate driving lessons, man.
Yeah, we were talking about driving lessons earlier. Do you enjoy it, mate?
I really do, yeah. I really, really like it. Yeah. I like the freedom.
Yeah, I like freedom.
But
as well.
I haven't, you know, I kind of missed out on the driving when I was younger and everyone else was doing it. So I'm quite trying to catch up.
You were making your own path. You were busy carving your own path musically. Driving could wait, right?
I guess so. But I'm having to catch up now. A bit odd when you're in a town centre and suddenly, like, a group of kids start following you in a car trying to do three-point
turns. Shit, I just remembered that. So what, are you doing the lessons in London?
I'm doing them around where I live. Yeah,
of course, yeah. I won't disclose that. Have you got your sights on your first car? Is it going to be like a nice, neat little P-Reg Fiesta?
I bought a Mini. It arrived this evening, actually.
Oh, wow. Nice.
What kind of Mini is it? Is it a new Mini or an old Mini?
Please say it's an old one.
I got it as an automatic, so it's a new one. It's nice. People keep telling me that I'm a hairdresser and or an estate agent.
Is it orange?
No, it's black.
Tints?
No tints, no.
No! 20-inch wheels? Twinkies?
No grills, no.
No,
just
Ed,
straight
mate.
Out black.
I know,
just,
I'm letting the team down.
You're going to put some Twinkies on that, I know you.
Yeah, I'll get some dice or something.
Go down to, like, South End and do, like, wheel spins and get, like, a little the speakers in the back and all that. Make sure you get them blue lights that you put on the bottom as well.
Yeah. I'm in, and a bottle of white stuff.
Aside from that huge thing that's happening in your life, learning to drive, you just played 3 sellout shows at Wembley Stadium. Have you come down yet, mate? From that feeling, because I haven't, bro. I was lucky enough to see you on the Saturday and have a little catch up and a drink and that. And like I said, I still haven't come down from it. Do you know what I mean?
I just got really ill afterwards. I kind of like body just kind of shut down. So I've got the flu pretty much the day after. But that usually happens after like a long tour.
You pretty much haven't stopped. I'd say your career's been a long tour.
Yeah, well, I get ill twice a year. I get ill in the summer and at Christmas. It's always when I get like a week off.
What's next? This a rest for the rest of the year?
No, I got the equivalent of Wembley in Ireland next weekend, Croke Park, and then back to America for like a month, and then I go to Australia for a month, and then I'm done.
Then I'm done. But you're not really, though, are you? You're never done, mate.
I'll have to make the third album, but yeah, in terms of like touring, I'll be done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Have you got ideas for the third album?
Yeah, my main idea for any album that I do is just good songs. If you have good songs, the rest will kind of follow.
And there's no one at the moment who's probably got a better judgment of a good song than yourself, mate. I reckon you're going to be quite big one day, mate. If you carry on the way you're going, mate.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
What are your plans for the rest of the week?
I've got to go up to Manchester at some point to see a mate. And I haven't really got any plans. I'm just here driving every day and then collapsing on my sofa. That's kind of it.
Are you still very surprised at the sort of monumental success of the second album? Have you come to terms with that yet?
Well, you know, I expected to get to a certain point with this album, you know, and it's taken me way, way, way beyond anything I expected or anyone else expected. You know, I finished up the last album with, like, 5 Hammersmith Apollo, so I just assumed with this album I'd end up doing, like, 102 Arena. Be able to do 3 Wembley Stadiums is pretty
Yeah, didn't
insane.
You did 502 Arenas, didn't you?
We did 4.
4.
In the end.
Only 4, mate? Jesus, mate. You're
slacking.
You're slacking, bro.
we were going to do five, but by the time we booked them, we were already starting to think about doing Wembley. So I was like, we shouldn't like over egg it if we're going to try and do that.
Yeah, you know for a fact you could have definitely done like 10 or some shit.
Yeah, I think it's good to leave people wanting more. Like, we could have done five Wembleys, but the fact that we did three and sold them out quickly means the next time we come, we can do more.
Absolutely. You've probably noticed the sort of massive rise since your rise to superstardom in sort of guitar-wielding troubadours. Do you have any advice for them, apart from stop copying you so fucking much?
No, do you know what? I think it always comes along in waves. When I first started trying to get into the industry, like, James Blunt was having massive success, and there was another wave of people, and that was 10 years ago now. So, like, I reckon in the next 10 years, someone else pops off as well. But I'd say the advice is, like, just enjoy it. Don't do anything if you don't enjoy it. When I first started trying to be a singer-songwriter, everyone was telling me the songs I should sing and the way I should perform, and I wasn't really enjoying it. And the moment I stopped that and started doing what I wanted to do, I enjoyed it.
Be a bit selfish.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, don't try and fit a mould. Like, just create your own mould.
Yeah, be yourself, right? Totally. Don't try and be someone else.
Totally sensible.
Tuesday Takeover with Jamal 15 on FUBAR Radio.
What's up, people? It's your boy Jamal 15, and you are locked into the Jamal 15 Takeover on FUBAR Radio. Everything you can find us on is FUBAR Radio. I'm here with my co-host, Maya, the man laugh.
Savannah. We're not going to go into that.
We're going to do that. We're going to do that right now. She has a very manly laugh.
I'm Maya Savannah, and I will try and get through this show without doing my man laugh.
It will happen.
With a little sprinkling of snorting.
So, we've got Liam Charles from the 2017 Great British Bake Off. Mm-hmm. Week 8, he was wrongly eliminated. Controversy online. What? He's doing better than the winners of the shows. Yeah, he's top boy. That's no summer is. House around here, fam. Liam.
What are you saying?
Wagwan G, what's going on?
I'm alright, you know. Yeah, I've had like a chill day today.
Is it? Yeah. You're Mr. Worldwide and that, innit?
Nope. I'm still national.
No, you're not.
I'm still national.
No, you're not.
I am still national. No, I promise you.
Let's be honest now. Yeah, we'll get into that. And actually, no, let's get into it now. Like, I swear, you're in a relationship, innit?
Yeah,
you're in a relationship.
Okay, why did you hesitate?
Why did you pause? Actually,
because obviously
he
like,
paused, looked left or right, and then said,
"Trust me."
And he huffed.
Wagwan.
So obviously, like recently, you know, you have like your ups and downs in it. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm still currently in one. So I don't know.
Are you in
say.
An up or a down?
A middle.
Oh God, I hate those.
I'm in the middle.
Why are you in the? Wait. Can we just break down first? His girlfriend does not live in the UK. She doesn't even live in Europe.
Yeah.
She's not even a part of Brexit.
I have to get Esther visa, bruv.
Jeez, where does your girlfriend live?
She's from the States.
The States. He's got money long.
His money is long.
Imagine having a girlfriend, overseas. He's like, babes, what are you doing tonight? Oh, nothing. The girls are going out. I don't want to go out. Oh, let me just fly and come see you.
Oh, my
His
Lord.
Money is long. He got that long money.
We were FaceTiming for, like, quite a while. And then we clocked that we liked each other when she came in January. And then since then we've been, you know, trying to work out and that, and then like we made it like official in April, and then but currently it's a bit of a like,
it's not easy,
it's
is it
techie,
overseas
bruv. It's so techie because obviously there's the distance, there's the time difference, and then the cultural difference as well, you know. British sarcasm is completely different to American sarcasm. Mm. I don't even know if they have sarcasm.
They don't have it. No, we're more intelligent than they are on the right. Yeah.
And I feel like, no offense, I think some of them are tabs.
Serious?
You're whispering on radio.
Like, nah, they are 100%.
Just low key, like.
Super tapped. Oh, yeah.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
Like, I just feel like, maybe not my girlfriend, but like.
Oh, of course.
Nah, you can say she's tapped.
I feel
she
like
loves you.
Some, yeah. Actually, majority. They feel like their lives is a reality TV show.
Oh my god!
So if everything's super chill that day, they have to like conjure some sort of drama out of thin air, and it's just like, why are you doing
that's
that?
That's exhausting.
Swear.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I feel like my trims are lasting longer because my hair's falling out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Come on.
I love the science behind that.
Love that. Yeah. Love that. Okay. Now, listen, I know Liam's got a game for me and Maya.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we know nothing about this game.
Yeah.
Liam has spoke to the producers.
Basically, it's just like a set of questions, right?
Yeah.
And I will judge you depending on how you answer these questions, Jamal.
Go on, do it. Do it then. Do it.
All right. So, first one. Okay. You're going out for dinner on the first date, yeah?
Oh, I love a bit of dinner. I love a bit of food and that. Come
where
on.
Are you taking the date and why?
Okay, where am I taking her, yeah? Okay, so like, I don't want to sweet her too much, yeah, because it's a first date and I'm trying to figure her out. So I'm going to keep it simple. but effective. So
don't say. Okay, go on.
You know what I'm going to say. Man's going to take Hernandez.
I knew it.
I knew he was going to say Nando's.
It's simple, yeah. Because listen, you can judge a lot when you take a girl to Nando's. Because
like what?
Okay, think about it. Like, she's obviously more than likely going to be eating chicken, yeah. So if she's having what, lemon and herb, medium, I can see what kind of level she is as a person.
And how spicy is she?
What's
the turn off for you in terms of chicken flavor?
If she's on a garlic and herb thing and goes, oh, that's kind of hot, y'all. You got brethren.
Oh,
get to the door now.
Oh.
Curtains, fam.
Okay.
What, lemon and herbs hot? Listen, if my mom cooked for you, then you're done out here. You're done out here.
You ain't seeing tomorrow.
Yeah, trust. My mom's oxtail's hot.
Lord, oh, God.
Yeah. So, I'll take Nando's thing.
Okay, I read that. All right, so now, it's gone well. Now you're four dates deep, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You offer to cook for her.
Yeah.
Now, she's going to the gaff now.
She's
going to
want
to
be wifey after I cook for
her. Right, so,
That's what everyone says.
What are you cooking for her?
What am I cooking for her? Yeah. Ah, boy.
No Guantanamo Bay meals, you know.
Listen, you know what? What am I going to cook for? After I find out what her food preference is, and I'll probably just cook up a... I have to be like a traditional thing, innit? So some fried dumpling, look a bit of mac and cheese and that. You know, I might look a bit of... I might do some southern fried chicken, actually. Southern fried chicken and waffles.
Mm.
Chicken and waffles, yeah. I'm gonna have her tapped after this.
So chicken, waffles, macaroni cheese.
Yeah, I'm a feeder, though. So I'm a feeder. So I love to, like, you know, I'll plump you up. So I'm going to make... I want her slouched on the sofa like... Rah.
She might not be able to do anything else.
No, exactly. No, I want to be on the sofa, yeah? I want to be on the sofa like, I want to have sex with you. But after that, I might want to just go to bed. I'll be like, you know what? That's fine.
Oh,
you're satisfied now.
So is that your winning meal?
Yeah, that's that, like...
Chicken and waffles.
So, like, chicken and waffles.
Comfort. Like, you're comfy now, aren't you? Like, relax. I'm going to go play computer. Relax. Like, lay on the sofa and sleep.
Mm-hmm. You like chicken, innit?
I don't even eat it. I'm pescatarian
He's
now,
pescatarian,
but...
You're pesco.
Yeah, I'm pesco, but listen,
so
I know everyone else isn't, so I would just... Everyone else...
I've got a question.
Go on.
So if you're pesco, yeah. Why are you taking your date to Nando's?
Because I'm looking after her, not me. Come on, G.
So you're not going to eat anything?
I'll have avocado and chips.
That is dead.
What do you mean?
As a pescatarian, there's a lot more options for you.
I know, but not at Nando's, let's be honest.
Yeah, but
you don't
have
peri-peri fish now.
Peri-peri fish. Sounds ridiculous.
No,
that sounds ridiculous.
Oh, that sounded good, though.
Hey, welcome to Nando's. Can I get your order? Yeah, can I please get a peri-peri fish?
To go.
Excuse me. Okay, so I've got some quick questions. So it's just either or. So I'm going to say them and you need to think quickly.
Yeah, so it's true.
No bugging.
Yeah, right, cool. They're called Who Are You Quick Fire Questions. So there's only 10. All right, so here we go. 1, 2, 3. Nights in or nights out?
That was way too long.
Nights out.
Oh, God. Number 2, sing or dance?
Dance.
Big spoon or little spoon?
Big spoon.
Burger or pizza?
Burger.
Good hair or good eyebrows?
Good hair.
Morning sex or morning conversations?
Morning sex.
Trust me, he's trying to talk
Why
in the morning, man.
Why did you need to whisper that? That was quite creepy.
Yeah, but who's trying to talk in the morning? Your breath stinks. Come on, G. Okay, but Liam, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, bro.
No,
absolute
bro.
Legend.
Well, hopefully next time you come on the show, you do bring us some cake.
Yeah, trust. He's selfish, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
Man's a baker. Man even come on here with no food.
International.
I am not international. I am national.
Ian Boltzmann.
I've got to interview Bob Saget.
Hello.
How big are your testicles?
Oh, I'm going to send you photos. I have a joke, so this is a joke, so I have to say that, so it doesn't sound like I'm planned. The joke was that people do send me dick pics, and I'm sure they do to you as well. Is that correct?
Do you know what? Actually, we have on this show, we've had dick pics.
We have had a dick
pic. No, not this show. It was a different show I did here. I did a show about sex, and this guy kept sending a picture of his penis. It was enormous.
He can be arrested, correct?
Yeah. I would have thought so, yes.
I thought so.
But then you saw his penis and you felt bad, so you figured no charges. People that send me dick pics, I block them, so the joke is I'm a cock blocker.
Nice, okay.
And it doesn't require a laugh, because when you tell someone you're telling a joke, you've ruined it.
Mm. Well, they're waiting to analyze, aren't they then, Bob?
Yeah, it's over now. I'll never tell it again.
I'm not one really for sending dick pics, really, Bob. But if
I'm not into pornography. I'd rather talk about it, but not at length.
Yeah. Well, the length was the issue.
I might lay on my back and take a picture of mine next to Big Ben, just for the heck of it. Just to maybe get a level, see if it's straight.
When was the last time you came to London?
Oh, I was there last time with my daughters. I have three daughters that are now 31, 28, and 25.
sounds like I'm a pimp. pick your favorite of my daughters. Anyone
Which
can be
one's
yours.
Got the best personality?
They put millions of dollars into their education.
Yeah.
That's how you get your money back. You sell them. But my fiance, who's older than my daughters, which is a miracle,
is
coming with me, and she's never been to London. She's been all over the world. And I've been there a few times. I was there once with an ex-girlfriend. May she rest in peace, but she's alive. But
I've got a few of them.
Oh, my. Life is not easy for any of us, I'll tell you.
No, man, I know.
No, and I think it's harder for us here in America at the moment, I think, for some of us.
I could believe that. Could you maintain to your fiancé, for fun, that there is actually a place on London Bridge? It won't be London Bridge. What is it? What's the Parliament Bridge? What's that one?
Westminster.
Westminster Bridge. Maintain on Westminster Bridge, there is a little tent where you can go in there and you can take a dick pic next to Big Ben. That actually, it does work.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, the end of the tent is open and you can lay down. You have a bit of privacy from the other sides, but you can actually take right down your body. You can lay yourself down, get yourself in a proud state, and you can actually take a picture of your penis next to Big Ben.
Is that like a private little thing? Or are you allowed to even do that? Or can could you do one in a bent over position? Because then you could be big bent over.
It could be. Oh, that is excellent, Bob. That is why you're
See, that, you know. That goes like with my other dick pic humor. But that one wasn't planned, which makes it more painful.
Yeah, no, it was excellent. But I'll tell you what the other issue is as well, is Big Ben at the moment is barely visible. You can't really see it because it's surrounded by scaffold at the moment. Mm.
Oh, that's upsetting.
Yeah.
But you can get in. Do you have to crawl under the scaffold? Because that's really all I want to show my fiance when we get there.
I think it's all closed.
Well, you know what I'm going to do in any case? I'll bring my selfie stick just in case I need it.
Right.
Because I got to get a good shot. I mean, I mean that in every sense of the word.
No, you're exactly right. And I think I want in on this idea with you, Bob. Can I tell you what I've been given in terms of information about you? I know who you are. I recently saw you on the Gary Shandling documentary. Was that right? You were on there, weren't you?
Yes. Gary was an old friend, and it was a complicated relationship. And Judd Apatow did a great job on that thing.
Do you know what? It was. I don't know how widely seen that's been in the UK. I know it was on Sky Atlantic over here because it was on HBO in the States.
Yes, it was. It was.
And Gary in the UK would be mainly known for Larry Sanders, I would imagine. You know, that would be certainly what he'd be known for the most. Certainly not known as a stand-up comedian in the UK. And It's Gary Shandling's show would have had a cult appeal in the UK, certainly.
My show Full House, which is a family show, was like Sky One for 4 years.
Yeah,
that's right.
Said, we've had enough of that.
Yeah. But that's right. But it was, I was a huge fan of Gary Shandling. Like, I really was. And I'm currently revisiting It's Gary Shandling show and watching the whole thing again. And it's a stunning piece. But I did find how you spoke. Well, you said then about your relationship being complicated. Could we talk about that a little bit? Do you mind?
Yeah, I mean, I had the person that started out my career, Brad Gray, was a dear friend. And I introduced Gary to him, and he was his manager. And they had a very difficult business dealing, and they went through kind of a divorce. And it was incredibly painful. I'm very close with his family. When I got divorced, he was like my best friend throughout it. But it was at the same time that I was getting divorced that Brad was sued by Gary, and it was just really uncomfortable. And all those years, those 15, 18 years, I kept trying to still be close with Gary because I still loved him, and I still do.
Yeah.
And Brad passed away 2 years ago, so these are two friends, one estranged and one to stay close with, but we lose people, and it's severely painful. And if you're caught in the middle, which I know some people would come up to me after they saw it and say, I've been in that situation. It's a terrible, terrible place to be, because I still have love for them. But Gary was one of the first comedians I ever knew, and all we did was write dick jokes together. That's all we ever did.
Yeah.
So I'm 22, he's 26. And he would say jokes like, I think my dog is sick because his penis tastes bitter. And I would say, that's a very good joke. And you can't really, I mean, that's not politically incorrect to say that right now. You're
that's
basically
fine.
Saying that you enjoy your dog. You know, it's not like you're not dehumanizing women or men or... It's not a racial slur. It's just saying that you blow dogs is what I'm saying.
Yeah, simple as that.
Just to break, I knew I needed to break that down.
It's good how you did it. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to you deconstruct that joke.
Yeah, you have to deconstruct something that needs absolutely none.
It was great how you told us what we were meant to think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what comedians do. And
I know,
to me, a lot of my humor, a lot of what I do is very British. My influences were Monty Python.
Yeah.
My influences were, I met Benny Hill when I was on a morning show on CBS in the United States. But he was very funny and very kind, and he made me laugh a lot when I was young. But it was interesting that Peter Sellers is the golden goose to me, of all of it. And I'm friends with a bunch of British comedians, like Jimmy Carr says, you're just like me. You look like you're a Family Guy on TV, and then you go out on stage and you say horrific things.
Yeah.
That's what you should be doing. Let them know that you think pedophile thoughts. And I said, I don't. Stop it. And then he would keep saying, come on, admit it, you do. And
this
is a Just for Laughs in Montreal. This is on stage, and this is not good.
It does sound like Jimmy, though.
It's a free associative, very comfortable talking to anybody. I've been doing it for 43 years, so you could put me in front of a million people, 40 people. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
you know,
you
could put me alone with someone in a hospital. You know, and I would do puppetry of the penis for them, which is...
That would be lovely, Bob.
It's magical.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
This is the busiest little studio
in the land today.
We've
got the absolutely gorgeous Love Island star, Jordan Rianne.
Hi. Jordan Rianne, she's in the house.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Fantastic. You're looking stunning.
Absolutely stunning.
Oh my God, I don't feel it. I've had like no hour's sleep.
Why?
I've just been running around like a headless chicken.
Has it been non-stop since you got out of that villa?
Stop, honestly. I'm like waiting for a day where I literally have nothing to do and I can sit on my sofa and catch up on all my films.
But today is not that day.
It's not that day today, no.
Darling, we're not going there because you've got to talk to us. Now, firstly, we've got to say, Curtis.
Oh,
that one word, Curtis.
He's lovely. Do you know what?
Caused a bit of drama, didn't it?
It did. I think I underestimated like how big it would actually be, but he really meant it. Like everything he said to me, he genuinely meant. I'm actually still quite surprised. Like even when I talk about it, I'm actually quite shocked as to how it even happened in the first place. But
wow. I mean, how did you feel about Curtis? I mean, what was your kind of reaction?
I was speechless. I think everyone's seen the moment when I kind of my jaw just kind of dropped. But I respected it, but for me it's like I love him to death as a person. I really do think, you know, regardless of how he handled the situation, he is a genuinely nice person. Romantically, it just wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like it didn't really matter what was going to be said. It was all the answer was always going to be the same. And genuinely, all I cared about was him and Amy, even over what me and Danny had.
Right,
I was like, it's all about you two. Forget me. It's about you two. So, yeah. It
well,
just,
I thought
it
initially that they were probably a potential winning couple.
Yeah, so did I.
So he really messed up.
He did. He risked everything.
I mean, did you feel for Amy? I mean, did your heart just go out to her?
Oh, yeah. And all I cared about was how she felt. As much as I had respect for Curtis for being honest, I just couldn't imagine Amy walking in and me stood next to him at the fire pit. Can you just imagine that?
No.
Amy walks in and I'm there holding his hand at the fire pit. Like, it just wasn't, it just could never have been.
You're
that.
A girl's girl, aren't you?
I really am. Like, and for me, I just felt like this is not the right way to do it. At least have the respect to tell her first.
Mm-hmm.
We're both going to be in the villa and then see. But then I feel like the moment he told her, he kind of realised with me it was a no-go anyway. So
I mean,
like,
do you think
he was like, shit.
Yeah.
Do you think Curtis ballsed it up, basically? I mean, do you think he really kind of didn't think properly?
No, actually, do you know what? From being in there, I actually thought he thought it through really well, and that's what scared me even more.
Wow.
He really meant it. He really thought about it. And when he said, you know, if recoupling was in half an hour, I'd pick you, he meant it. And that was like days worth of him thinking about it, because obviously for you guys, it's like a day or two later, but he'd been thinking about that for days. We were in Castromore for 5.5 days.
Okay.
So typically Castromore's only 2.
Yeah.
And we had 5.5. So he had a lot of time to think about it, and he meant it. It stressed me out even more that he was that serious.
Yeah,
he's getting himself into a little bit of
I think since it's actually not been very good for him. He's kind of tumbled down a bit in people's estimations.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you feel about him and Maura? Because it's, well, I mean, there was quite some action.
There was. I'm very intrigued for them to all come out and tell us the real
what's actually
honestly,
gonna...
what's really going on.
What went on under those covers?
But, honestly.
I mean, what do you think about that situation?
I actually think, whether or not it will last long, long, long term, I don't know. But I actually think it could be something. Curtis has this like really fiery, cheeky side that we've never seen as a public. Like, you just do not see it. And it's almost as equal or on par with how Maura is. And it's just a side you don't see of him. And I feel like Maura brings it out of him, but he knows how to silence her at the same time. It's like he kind of makes her a little bit
more... But why didn't they work this out earlier?
Oh, he had Amy.
This
and
is
she,
what I don't understand. She, I don't
she's
buy
always
it.
Liked him.
Really?
She, yeah, she's always liked him. From day two, she said she wanted him. Mm. It just never worked out. And now is the time. It kind of, I felt like for her, it was like, okay, let's go for it. I just feel like everything has a right time. Maybe. And I feel like between Maura and Francesca, I felt like it was always going to be Maura.
Quiet. Well, I've just seen your phone ringing with a certain,
did you see
with a certain name,
certain
on,
name
there.
On it.
What is the name?
Danny.
Now, Danny boy.
So tell us about what's going on now.
We are together.
Are you an official couple? Why isn't he listening to the show? He should know you're on Uber.
Yeah, good point.
Because he's running around like a madman trying to get prepped, bless him, for another event we've got after this. So he's literally running around like a headless chicken trying to sort his life out. He's almost as crazy as me.
So, but is that, I mean, because you essentially haven't known each other that long.
No, it's been a month.
So are you worried?
Do you know what? Typically, I would say yes. If the villa didn't exist and any of that didn't exist, I would be like, a month, are you for real? But I feel like when you live with someone for 24 hours a day,
yes,
constantly, you see them first thing in the morning, you see them at night, you see them when they're upset, you see them when they're happy. Like, you literally see everything. Just being in the villa alone speeds everything up. So I feel like as much as me and him have, like, labelled it, at the same time, we don't act like we have. We genuinely take it day by day, and we're just, like, we just enjoy being around each other.
But it's fast. You've met the families.
Yeah. To be fair to him, that was like somewhat of an accident, but he loved it, because obviously my family met me at the airport, so he had no choice really when it came to my family.
Hi.
He had no choice. It was like he walked in, it was like my parents and my cousins and my best friends.
It's like your worst nightmare.
Literally,
you just started dating someone
and they're all there just smiling in your face at the airport. Yeah. But then from that point on, you know, he came with me to my cousin's graduation and met more of my family, so that was very intentional.
Wow.
I went to Leeds and to Hull and stuff to meet his family, so those things were intentional. And I just felt like it made sense. I just feel like because his family lives so far away, it's nice that my family have kind of like not taken him in, but he is basically like family to them. Oh. Like, he has another family here, and I feel
so
like
you basically
helps.
Are living together and stuff as well then?
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
That's going to be happening soon. This is a roller coaster. It's going quick.
Potentially. Well, we both need to move, and it's been a topic of conversation. Whether or not it will definitely happen, we're going to see, because
but it might.
It could. It's just, you know, this is real life now. It's not the villa anymore.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's true.
We've got to think about it.
No one's
going to
vote one of you out.
Exactly. This is real life. Yeah. With real bills.
Were you upset that Danny contacted some of the exes from the show?
No. I was actually one of the people encouraging him to do so very soon. I just feel like when you're in the show, everything looks worse and is heightened, mm-hmm. and feelings are, you know, sped up and stuff like that. And I just felt like, out of respect, if he genuinely got on with them, even if it was just on a friendship level, regardless, the situation wasn't the best of situations, and out of respect, he should check that they're okay.
So I can understand that. That's very level-headed of you.
Yeah. I think, gosh, I wish I was like you.
The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
Studio with me this week, I have my gorgeous Irish friend Riad.
Hi there, how you doing?
It's time for one of my favourite games, Shitter Twitter.
Should it be like Twitter?
A Christmas like thing, like
with jingle bells,
maybe,
and then farting sounds because it's shit. Yeah, great, perfect.
Done. The rules of Shitter Twitter is just, hey, let's read later. You feel like maybe you're on a roll and you've just come up with so many tweets and you can't tweet them all at once, and so you save some but then you forget about it. Or something that you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to say that publicly, and so you save it to like come back to later.
Well, I didn't think I had any until I went in. I never checked my drafts. And turns out that I didn't save these purposely. It happened because my old flat had such shit internet.
Oh, so they never sent. Ooh, that's another reason why you could have Twitter.
They just went in. There's one here that isn't even finished. I don't know how it got in there, but it's there.
I love those ones. Please read it.
So my first one is, so last night I was on the toilet.
what's the end of that?
I don't know.
What is the end of that story?
I'm trying to think, but the date is like 3.5 months ago.
Do you have any idea what you're doing on the toilet 3.5 months ago?
I think I had dairy the night before. And you know what dairy does to me, Whitten. I mean, it's an atomic bomb. So I presume it would have ended something like, so last night I was on the toilet.
Yeah.
And I nearly shat out my liver.
Oh my god.
Or something like that. I'm not sure what it happened, but yeah.
Wow. So
read it.
Oh my god.
This is your turn, yeah?
Yeah. I just had a look at mine and there's a few here. Two of them are about masturbating.
Hannah.
I know.
Come on. How did you ever get a job on the radio? No, honestly.
I was too busy masturbating. I shouldn't be a productive person. I spend too much time
sitting there flicking your bean.
I knew you were going to use that phrase. I knew it. I knew it!
Really?
Yeah. Why? I was literally just about to say that. Because I thought that that's what you were going to say.
Because you know I like
it. Oh my God.
It's such a dirty, disgusting...
You disgust me. Anyways, so this one draft just says, anyone else make to-do lists in their head that include masturbating? Do you do that?
I think I have done.
So like, okay.
I think I have done.
Context here.
Yeah.
It's like... I'm on a train home or on the underground home or whatever. And in my head, I'm like, okay, when I get back, I need to do this, 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 and this. And like one of those things will be masturbating.
No, actually, I can tell you I have done that.
Stay home and chill. Keeping you company during the coronavirus.